Our passage this morning is from the fifth chapter of the book of Ephesians, and we'll be going through the first 11 verses. And it says this, it says, "Follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. But among you, there must not even be a hint of sexual immorality or of any other kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are all out of place, but rather thanksgiving. For of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a person is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of such things God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. Therefore, do not be partners with them. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light, for the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth. And find out what pleases the Lord. Have nothing to do with fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them." Let me say that last verse again. Have nothing to do with fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. I want to use a familiar story from the Old Testament to illustrate this idea of not letting fruitless deeds of darkness consume us, but rather living in such a way that we expose fruitless deeds of darkness. A little background. The concept of time, or the concept of history in the ancient Near East, I'm talking thousands and thousands of years ago, even before the formation of God's people, their concept of time and history is different than ours today. Today we think of time as more linear, we're heading somewhere, we're progressing, but then their view of history and time was more cyclical. For example, back in the day, your family or your tribe, they had a plot of land. And your parents lived on that plot of land, and so did their parents, and so did their parents' parents, and so on. And it was expected that you would live there as well. And not only that, it was expected that your kids would live there as well. Most people, thousands and thousands of years ago, in the ancient Near East especially, they did not travel far from home. There were no hospitals or nursing homes, but you had siblings. So your mom would be a little bit uncomfortable. She would go to the back of the tent. There would be more uncomfort, more discomfort. Things would get hectic, maybe loud, and a couple days later, you have a brother or sister. You saw this. They didn't go to the hospital to do this. You had grandparents. Their breathing became difficult. They went into a corner. They lied down, and sooner or later, they passed away. This was not done in some hospital. This was done in the tent. There was a cycle. There was birth. You grew up. You worked. You got married. You had kids. And then you died. And this happened over and over and over again, generation after generation. There wasn't much change. And it's not like technology was progressing very rapidly back then. So pretty much you did what your parents did. You did what you did in the way your parents did it. And not only that, you did it in this generation after generation. It was a cycle. It was predictable. It was repetitive. And the same cycle and spiral view seems to be true of life choices as well. Take, for example, two of the issues we see in our passage of Ephesians 5 today. Greed and sexual immorality. For example, greed. In just the first couple of pages in the Bible, in just the first few chapters, we see Adam and Eve greedy. It causes them to eat something that God told them they shouldn't have. The cycle continues. The next generation. Greed continues. Envy and greed causes Cain to kill Abel. The cycle continues. A few generations pass, and the people are so greedy, they want to be like God, and so they end up constructing the Tower of Babel. You can see greed. It's hereditary. It's cyclical. It's predictable. It's repetitive. Another example, sexual immorality. Again, only a few chapters into the Bible and things are out of control. People are hardly living a healthy sexuality as God intended. And that's only a couple chapters in. Again, generations continue. And later, you have less than holy relationships taking place between people and a feeling, which is a whole nother conversation that we'll get into later. It doesn't take long for this to spiral downward. So it turns out that sexual immorality also hereditary, repetitive, predictable. It's a cycle. In general, self-absorbed living, sin, the breaking of shalom, started with Adam and Eve. The cycle continues in only 6 chapters into the Bible. Things are so bad that the Lord says grieved that he had made man on the earth and his heart was filled with pain. Do you see how the cycle spins downward over and over? Because it turns out that self-absorption and sin and breaking of shalom, it's predictable. It's repetitive. It happens over and over. So you have this view of history and you have this view of time that's a cycle, and you also see it with people in the destructive life choices that they make. And into this view of cycles, you suddenly and unexpectedly get God's first words to Abram, who we all know later will be Abraham. And he says this, "Leave your land, your birthplace, and your father's house, and go to the land I will show you." Wait, what? Leave? People don't leave their land in ancient Near East culture. They don't leave their birthplace. They don't leave their father's house. And the people in the ancient Near East don't set off for an unknown territory. They just don't do that. It doesn't fit the narrative. What's going on is something new. That's not what you do when you have a cyclical view of history and a cyclical view of time. You do what your parents did, and you do what their parents did, and you do it the same way in the same place, and so on. And so why would God ever ask Abraham to go and leave and to go break out of this cycle? Well, the thing is that people tend to conform. Would you agree? Abram needed to get up and get out because people, like sheep, mindlessly often adopt the standards of their land. Even more significantly, people often are influenced and absorb the standards of their birthplace, neighborhoods, friends, friend groups, things like that. And even more than that, people often absorb the standards of their family, of their father's house, of their nuclear family. I think all of us would agree. And God says to Abram at this time in history, this is not working. This is not helpful. This is not getting what we intended. We need to stop this mindless conformity. This isn't leading to anything productive. Abram, I want you to be different. I want you to break this cycle. And it's not to be different just for the sake of being different. It's being different to start something new. God says to Abraham, I want you to be different. And in 18 chapters into Scripture, this is what he says. I want you to teach your children and your households after to follow the way of the Lord by doing what is right and what is just. That is hardly true of the cycles that were continuing before. But we are breaking that cycle. We are starting something new. And I want you to live and to teach your children and their children the ways that are right and the ways that are just. Our passage this morning in Ephesians identifies this way of love as a way of thanksgiving and a way of goodness and a way of righteousness and justice and truth. If the old cycle was fruitless deeds of darkness, then this is a completely new way that again is described in our passage as the way of light. The fruitless deeds of darkness have nothing to do with it. Rather, expose those things by this new way of doing things, which is righteousness and just. It's the way of light. Commenting on the story of Abram, Jonathan Sacks says, the way of light was instructed by God and given to Abram would actually expose the fruitless deeds of darkness of the other nations and the other people groups around them. He says that Abram, who became Abraham, and his descendants, which is us, God's people, would live in such a way that our gratitude and our appreciation and our thankfulness and our love and our justice and compassion and righteousness, that literally our lives would be a critique on other people's way of living. that what we teach in our lives would honestly expose the way that other people are choosing to live their lives. And Abram obeyed God's command to leave and to not conform, to have nothing to do with the deeds of darkness, but rather to live in the way of light. Interestingly, thousands and thousands of years later, when Paul writes a letter to the church of Ephesus, we see this same idea repeating itself. Paul is saying to the church of Ephesus and Christians in Ephesus and their surrounding cities, do not conform. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness. Just like the people in the first chapters of Genesis, the church of Ephesus was also immersed in a culture filled with fruitless deeds of darkness. Just like in the first pages of Genesis, greed was an issue in Ephesus. You can go to Ephesus today, and you can see the excavation of what are called the terrace houses. These were luxurious places of living for the wealthy in the area, where they lived within eyeshot of oppression that was taking place just below them. The Old Testament prophets couldn't stand this, but it was greed, and Ephesus was a part of that. Just like in the first pages of Genesis, sexual immorality was an issue in Ephesus. In fact, one of the things that we've already talked about, the largest temple, one of the largest temples of that time, was a temple to the goddess of Artemis, and she was all about fertility. And the celebration and the worship of her included sexual acts and celebrations and worship that would be less than God's ideal. So just like God said to Abram, Paul says to the church in Ephesus, do not conform. Do not participate. Have nothing to do with those fruitless deeds of darkness. And interestingly, Paul does not stop with the instruction to just not participate in that. He could have stopped right there, but he doesn't. He says, have nothing to do with it. Why? Because he knows that if you simply stop participating in something, if you simply go on the defensive, that people could see that in such a way where maybe you're not that against it. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. By not participating, people can see your lack of action as a way of ambivalence or indifference to what's going on around you, as if bowing down to power and to pride and to idols is really not that big a deal. By doing nothing, you can actually normalize something or be complicit in it. So Paul says to the church, don't participate. So don't just not participate in the deeds of darkness. Do something about the problem. And what is the church in Ephesus supposed to do about all the fruitless deeds of darkness that they're absolutely immersed in? And Paul says, expose them. Expose the fruits, the fruitless deeds of darkness. How? Well, they could have pointed a finger at all the deeds of darkness that were taking place around them. That would expose them. They could have publicly judged and criticized those who participated in fruitless deeds of darkness. That would also expose them. But that's not what Paul says to do. Paul says you will expose the fruitless deeds of darkness that are taking place all around you by living in the way of light. Just like in Genesis. Live in the way of love, verse 2 says. It's the way of Jesus. It's offering yourself as an offering and a sacrifice, talked about in chapter 5, verse 2, because in doing so, you also serve God. Follow the way of goodness and righteousness, justice and truth, because that is the way of light. And verse 13 will go on to say, everything exposed by the light becomes visible. So we are not just to not participate in the destructive and the fruitless deeds of darkness. We're supposed to expose them by the way we live in the light. So God says to Abram, leave that cycle. Time to do something new. Live and teach in a way where you're doing what's right and you're teaching the way that it's our just. And in doing so, Father Abraham, a blessing the blessing from the line which gave us Jesus, thousands and thousands of years later, the way of Abraham taught by God still exposes fruitless deeds of evil. In the same way, Paul says to the church of Ephesus, do not conform to the fruitless deeds of darkness. that are all around you, and don't do nothing either, because then you might be complicit or normalize this whole thing. Rather, expose it. Expose it in the way that Jesus showed us to live. And isn't it crazy how history, thousands and thousands of years, still repeats itself? How far into the evening news do we have to get before we hear the same issues talked about over and over again? Power grabbing, idolatry, pride, sexual immorality, and so on. Today, the same thing that's in these passages, the fruitless deeds of darkness that were applicable then, are also applicable to us now. And here's the good news of the gospel this morning. We are invited to have nothing to do with those things. That is really good news, because we know how destructive they are. But we don't just stop in not participating in them. We do something about it. We don't normalize it. We don't accept it. We don't pretend it's okay. We don't become complicit of it just by sitting on our hands and going into defensive. The good news is that we're invited to expose it. But let's be honest. Conforming to the ways around us is really, really easy, isn't it? For me, it is. There was an experiment by a man named Solomon Ash not that long ago. And he assembled a group of people. And for each person, he gave them two cards. One card had a line on it. The other card had three lines on it. And the experiment was that he asked them which lines on the second card were the same length as the length of the one line on the other card. So two cards. But what the people being tested didn't know is that they were in a group of people and everyone was in on it except for them. And so for the first couple, they all gave the correct answer, but they were told not to give the right answer in the questions following. And what happened to the people who were being tested? They started giving the wrong answer that they knew was wrong just because everyone around them was giving the wrong answer as well. It's easy to conform, wouldn't we all agree? The pressure to conform is real, and it can cause us to say even what we know is untrue. So Paul knows that people can easily be conformed, so he says, don't do it. Go on the offensive and expose it. How? Live in the way of love, live in the way of light, the way of Jesus. I want to give you an example of this. Last year, Matthew Flores, he's a 12-year-old from Sandy, Utah. We have a picture of this. It's the first image. Right there, that's Matthew Flores. He approached a postal worker, and that's the postal worker. His name is Ron Lynch, and asked if he had any extra advertisements or junk mail that he can give him. And Lynch, the postal worker, said, why would you want that? Well, he said, we don't have enough money in my family to afford books, and we don't have the fares to get to the library, and I love to read, so I'll just take anything that you can give me, and I'm going to read through it. Well, the mailman said he didn't want electronics, he didn't want to sit in front of the TV, he didn't want to play games all day. This child wanted to read. And so what did he do? He told the news outlets, he got in touch with people on social media, and people from all over the world began to give books to this young man. And he promised, Flores promised, that as he read the books, he would pass them on to people who need them as well. That mailman, I believe that's the way of light. That's the way of thankfulness and compassion, the way of love. And honestly, that exposes in me the blinders I have to the needs of people around me. And honestly, what he did actually exposes in me my lack of compassion to deal with the needs that I know take place all around me. That's the way of light, exposing the fruitless deeds of darkness around us. Another example, Rebecca Garvison. She was boarding a flight with her infant child. And you know how it is when an infant's coming down. Everyone's giving her the glare, like, I hope you're not sitting next to me. I hope the child turns out to be healthy, but not here. I just hope to be. And so anyways, as she sits down, the baby starts to wail, and she's getting the looks from people around her. Well, next to her was a woman named Nisha Miller. And Nisha says, hey, can I help you out? Can I just hold your baby for a little bit? And as it turns out, as soon as Nisha held the baby, and I'm not sure how tired you have to be as a parent to give your baby to a stranger, But let's play along with it. So Nisha gets the baby, and as soon as, not long after, the baby's asleep. And not only the baby's asleep, but it provided some rest for the mom. And so on social media, the mom, Rebecca, wrote, "This woman will never understand how happy the act of kindness made her and her family." She said that Nisha could have been irritated like everyone else on the plane, but rather she held the baby the entire flight and let both the baby and the mom have some rest. I think that's the way of light, right? That's the way of love. That's the way of Jesus. And I think that exposes, at least it exposes in me, my lack of doing unto others as I would want done unto them. Because with kids, would I want help? Sure. Am I the first on a plane to offer help? Nope. Do you see how that's an example of how the way of light can expose in all of us the fruitless deeds of darkness? So you might have heard that there was a significant wedding that took place in the last 2 weeks. Kind of a big deal. I'm really not into royal weddings, but I saw a lot of the hype and all of the headlines coming through before the wedding. But one thing I didn't hear in all the hype in the headlines was that I didn't think that anybody ever thought that a relatively unknown preacher from America was going to steal the show. I actually, again, didn't watch the wedding, saw some of the headlines, didn't look into it, but when I saw that Saturday Night Live spoofed a relatively unknown American preacher, I said, I got to look into this. And it turns out that there's a really good reason for all the hype and for all the attention on this pastor. Because Bishop Michael Curry, he's clearly a dreamer, and I mean that in the best, most respectful way possible. And so I'll conclude with a portion of his message that created all of the hype. And think about this, as opposed to all the world that is filled and immersed in fruitless deeds of darkness, this is what he said. He said, imagine a world where love is the way. Imagine our homes and family when this way of love is the way. Imagine our neighborhoods and community when love is the way. Imagine our governments and nations when love is the way. Imagine business and commerce when love is the way. Imagine this old world when love is the way. No child will go to bed hungry in such a world as that, and apparently no child will go without books either. When love is the way, we'll let justice roll down like a mighty stream and righteousness like an ever-flowing brook. When love is the way, poverty will become history. The earth will be a sanctuary. When love is the way, we will lay down our swords and shields by the riverside and study war no more. When love is the way, there's plenty of good room, plenty of room for all of God's children. When love is the way, we'll actually treat others like we're actually family. When love is the way, we know that God is the source of it all, and we're brothers and sisters, simply children of God. He goes on to say, brothers and sisters, that's a new heaven. That's a new earth. That's a new world, a new human family, which is straight from Ephesians. Let me tell you something, he says. Old Solomon was right in the Old Testament. He said, that is fire. And so may we, Palm Desert Community Presbyterian Church, not conform to the world around us. May the light of the fire that Bishop Curry talks about, the way of Jesus, actually expose the fruitless deeds of darkness in your life, in my life, and in the world around us. And may it begin with us. Amen.